Welcome to eight. Yes, I am not marked, just in case you were wondering. Welcome to 8-4 Play.
Are you JJ or John? Because they can't tell.
I know, right?
Just yeah. Bury the lead.
Which one are you?
I'm JJ, your host. I'm sorry. JJ, Gaming JJ Epperson. Your host for this, the best, most audacious, wonderful, the Alpha and the Omega, Dr. Zaius' favorite podcast.
You don't have to copy Mark. It's okay.
I like doing it. You don't have a nickname for yourself? No,
he said Gaming JJ.
I'm the Gaming JJ.
But that's not your nickname.
Well, then, do you have one for me here?
Let's see.
now we're going to see.
Oh, no, Tony had one.
Oh, Tony had one?
I did? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Justin Jitters Epperson.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because poor JJ, he has to host the podcast, and only just like maybe 4 seconds before we started, he was like, oh my God!
So yes, and that's Tony Precious Scalp Loazler.
What?
Precious. Oh, okay. This has to do with the shampoo that we found, right?
Yeah,
you found shampoo?
Last week, while everybody was at, a GDC, me and the rest of the interns did a little spring cleaning, and we had this section of our office that was more like a storage area. And while we were cleaning out, we found this unopened box of shampoo samples.
Mm-hmm. Lots and lots.
Yeah, about 1,000.
It was a sealed box. And like, it was just like, oh, why is this here? It is a mystery. And it's like, normally with all the kind of knickknacks and odds and ends you could find in this office, you can find somehow how they're related to the work that we do, to the things that we're interested in. Right. But no. Sealed box.
Was this like a free like sampling that came with your placenta pills or something?
I wonder.
I remember when we got this, and like I actually took a few home because there were two boxes.
Yeah.
Oh no. Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that too. Actually, I didn't realize there was an unopened box.
But I offered Tony some of the samples, and he said that he would not use them because he was afraid of the chemicals affecting his precious scalp.
Yeah, Matt. Hey, you know, the largest organ in your body is supposedly skin.
Yeah.
Why would you want to ruin any part of it?
So are you telling us and all of our listeners that you never wash your hair?
No, I wash my hair, but I wash it with, you know, like more expensive shampoos.
Well, actually, to be completely honest,
I would be rather poor in the coming months, so maybe I might take you up on that offer.
That's kind of why I offered, but we already threw it away.
Well, that's fine.
It smells like
strawberries, right. Anyways. Right.
Well, let's keep it moving. We don't have a whole lot of time today.
And that sexy voice is John the Iceman Ricciardi.
Why not the Ice King?
Well, the Ice King is fine.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah, that's
the Ice King.
I wrote this down.
Yeah, you're not a king.
You only got one.
I was the iced once, and you were holding a bottle of Smirnoff Ice the whole time.
So that's for real? He was actually doing that to ward off?
No. She wasn't even there. So here's the story.
Okay, go ahead.
Which is going to be very brief because it's not that interesting.
Right.
Ryan O'Donnell, friend of the show. Ryan O'Donnell, friend of the show. Of Area 5, his intern basically iced me at the 1UP gathering. We recorded a final 1UP podcast. I don't know when it's going up. It's not up yet, right?
I haven't heard of
it. But they did like a final, like the last 1UP podcast ever. A whole bunch of people were on it. And so we were out there for that, and she iced me in the lobby. And I was a really good sport about it. I took it. I drank it. Mm-hmm. It definitely helped that I was being iced by an attractive young woman.
She was very cute.
Who am I to say no?
Yeah.
But she did then give me a spare, basically. So now, if anyone else tried to, if anyone else tried to get me, they would be
okay.
Countered.
Yeah,
okay.
It's nice, and you know, but you were like holding on to that bottle as like
this is the best part.
You were looking very pale when you came back from that podcast. And you're like, I got iced. But I have a bottle. I have a bottle to guard me.
Really? What you said?
Yeah.
But actually, the funny thing is I told everybody throughout the show that I was carrying a bottle in my bag, but I actually wasn't. I put it back that night and never had it the rest of the show. But you know what? I wasn't going to do it again anyway. I was a good sport about it once, but if someone came up to me again, I would have been like, yeah, right. But,
wait. No one else came up to you afterwards?
No. A couple people asked, like, did you get iced? Oh, that's it. We even had, like, our last night, we were in a bar with Katoka-san, the Tokyo Jungle director. It was just me and him and Hiroko, like, really late. It was, like, midnight, and some dude walked up, a listener, and was just like, oh, hey, you know, I'm a fan of the show, which is awesome. We got a lot of that at GDC.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever did that, you guys are all awesome. But the next thing he said was, like, how many times did you get iced? And I was like, yeah, just once, sorry. He seemed really disappointed.
Yeah, we worked really hard so when we put the podcast out last 2 Fridays ago, we actually delayed it which we I'd like to apologize for because I know a lot of people like to listen before their morning commute. But we delayed it in order to send John a fake version of the podcast with the part about icing him cut out. And like, you know, I for the whole time I was like sweating, like, oh my God, John's gonna John's just gonna listen to it anyways. And Mark was no like, no, I got this, just let me take care of it. And
but, yeah, you were worrying even after Mark left. Yeah. You're like, oh, I don't know if this is the right way to do it.
Yeah,
I, just, I mean, like, even if I did, like, what's the big deal? It's not that, like, I mean,
well, we wanted
you guys
to
went
be
through
a
lot of effort for a really stupid thing. It's
we just
like,
we wanted
no,
to
it
surprise
was fun.
You.
It's
yeah.
also
yeah.
a lot
it was
of
fun. I had fun too. I'm not, I had fun too, but I will say, like, I was kind of pissed off because I got up early for you people, and then you made me listen to the podcast saying there was like noise in the background. So just know when you least
no
expect
need to
it,
apologize.
Sometime in the future, there
this
will be
all
revenge.
Mark's idea.
No, no, no. Both of you guys are going to get revenge.
By the way,
fine. Well, let's wait for the revenge.
Actually,
that
maybe
sounds
you
like
too.
Fun too.
That was, by the way, the idea of Mark. Tall guy in a little coat. McDonald. I just watched the Giant Bomb live stream that he's on, and you'll notice that his jacket is too small for him. And about to interject into John's story about being iced was Tom Staniforth. I didn't have a nickname for you, but I just, in place of a nickname, can you please do your American accent?
Oh, that okay. Wait, but this needs to be quantified that this is purposefully a bad American accent.
Sure, it is.
Give us your best American accent.
I can't do a good one. That's why it's purposely bad.
Are you do the thing where you say you're from New York?
Oh man, hey buddy, I'm from New York.
Okay, and we'll just leave it at that. And also with us this week, which you heard only on the ice segment, but you'll hear him through the whole podcast this week, is Dan the Cookie Monster.
You are
Schroeder.
A cookie monster.
Hey, why am I the cookie monster?
Because you bring us all the cookies and sweets.
The awesome
Dan's wife is makes sweets, yeah, for a living, and she always is delivering awesome stuff to the office.
Yeah.
And today she gave us these like super rad cookies with the 84 Play logo on them.
You've probably saw them on
Yeah, we tweeted about it.
Yeah, we tweeted about
it. You should
them.
Link to it on the in the show notes
sure.
too, but it's really really awesome. She's always bringing us stuff. So yeah,
yeah
when,
whenever you guys
cookie
need
monster.
Cookies or cakes to be made in Japan.
In Japan,
give her a ring.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to throw this out here right at the top. As you've probably already gathered, we always like to kind of get a little loose and when Mark is not around.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mark is sort of the and to his credit, he does an amazing job of this, but he's kind of the guy who keeps things moving forward,
right.
keeps us on point, you know, doesn't really let anybody talk for too long. With him out, all bets are off. And we also have three interns here. So it's kind of like the backup cast. It's the
right.
scab cast. There's no Mark. We're just all here sort of. Shooting the shit.
Shoot.
And that's
right.
how
sure,
it's gonna
we're
be.
Kind of going to be off point. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
and,
if you're
and
still
if
around,
have,
it means you love us. We actually get a lot of people who ask us to do this more often.
You,
and we don't.
You may have noticed, but Hiroko, the ringleader, Minamoto, has been talking quite a lot more than usual. And that is
right,
also
that
because Mark is gone.
It's always a result.
Right.
And Hiroko is the ringleader because
the
ringleader. She wrangled all the Japanese speeches at GDC and knocked it out of the park, from what I hear.
Yeah, GDC went really well.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, it was a busy several weeks, months.
It was,
leading
it was
up
like 6:30 at night, and you were emailing me, and like you had no idea what time it was over here. But you're like, I took some sleeping medicine. I might be falling asleep
right.
soon.
Right.
What
yeah.
time? What time at night was that?
That was probably around like 3 a.m. or so,
Jesus Christ.
And I was like, okay, I need to wake up at 7, so I should just take a pill and then, like, you know, knock myself out for
really,
3 or 4 hours.
It's really dangerous because when you take sleeping pills, you're supposed to get like the full 8. Not 3 or 4.
You know, I tried it once, and it was a mild one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, this is not going to knock me out for 8 hours. That's
oh, God.
I,
this
oh,
is
wow.
this is a story that sounds like it will end in tears.
Well, Mark ripped up some concoction, too, like the first couple of nights. He slept to like 11 a.m. the first night there, which you don't do when you're jet lagged. So he's down on the whole, you guys, these guys can't sleep on the plane.
I can't.
So they needed it, yeah.
Yeah.
But GDC went good. GDC,
it
we did,
great.
We covered six, I think we talked about this a little bit in a previous episode. We covered 6 talks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were really interesting. Naramura-san from Nigoro, who made La Mulana, had a great talk talking about how they kind of remade that game and how they went to the community for to get like feedback. Like how he was talking about how they would like read the comments on the Nico Nico videos and like, you know, kind of see what people were saying about specific points in the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was super hardcore. Like, they really paid attention to the fans.
That's actually pretty smart.
Yeah.
He illustrated this great example where there's this one boss in the game where they players found a glitch in the original version of the game where you could get on a platform above the boss's head and just, like, crouch down, and then you can kind of, like, kill the boss without getting hit.
Crouch down.
And so in the remake, what they'd set it up, what'd you say?
I said crouch down. You said crouch down.
Crouch down.
That's the same. Kind of.
And, you can crouch down and basically attack the boss. But so what they did in the remake is they set it up so that if you actually try to do that, the boss will punch the platform above you and break it so you can't stay up there.
And wasn't there a message that, I forget, there was a message that shows up when...
Maybe, I don't remember.
There, yeah.
But,
well, anyway, so his presentation is going to be up on GDC Vault.
Oh, cool.
So,
which is like $6,000 to get, right, though. Isn't that really expensive?
Will there be a few that are free?
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if his will be free or not. But yeah. So his presentation itself was really, like, his presentation was good, and his the document he put together was pretty amazing too.
Yeah, he drew pictures of, like, all his different slides. Yeah. And, like, one of his slides had, like, a picture of, like, the quote unquote, as he wrote, seniors of the indie game industry, and it was like
seniors of the indie.
Well, it's just kind of Japanese English, but it was like supposed to be like the people who are, like, they look up to as indie, you know, kind of successes in the world. And it had, like, a picture of, like, Notch and holding, like, a Minecraft thing, and
right.
Like,
because Minecraft is actually really big in Japan.
The Meat Boy guys, mm-hmm. Edmund and Tommy, like, holding the Meat Boy basically, and right. Like Phil Fish holding, like, Fez. It was really cool.
Oh, wow. So I knew that, like, when in the planning stages, he wanted to talk about or make a joke about what Phil said about Japanese game.
Exactly. He did that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He did talk about that. And he basically said how it was, like, you know, inspired them to Japan to kind of to, like, you know, do better, which is awesome.
That's cool. That's,
yeah. It was really cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
And all right. So that's, yeah, one of the talks that was really
cool.
Who else? Cool, but
was there anything else that was.
Kataoka-san from Tokyo Jungle,
right.
He was talking about, like, well, so, you know, he's a also an indie creator.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, well, first when I approached him, he was like, well, our game is not, like, you know, technically that great, so mm-hmm. I don't feel comfortable in talking about, like, teach people about tech stuff. But right. He was saying that he could tell people about, like, you know, what kind of stuff that they went through as an indie developer so that was pretty interesting.
Were there any funny anecdotes about, like, what he had to do to get his game published or...
He showed that poster, right? He had this, like, poster that they had that inspired him to, like, want to become a creator. It was, like, Elvis looking guy, the Sony, like, camp.
Well, that
thing.
Was the Sony camp ad poster. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And let's see, there was also Itsuno-san of
Dragon's Dogma.
That was really
director.
Cool. They showed footage of Dragon's Dogma that they've never shown before, and a lot of he was telling the crowd, like, it's basically a lot of concept art that they never mm-hmm. released to the public. That's what those are the good ones, when they come and actually show stuff you've never seen before.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was
he
good.
Had like
he had three trailers that you showed that was not revealed to the public.
He yet. Showed the trailers that they used internally to kind of try and sell the game and pitch the game to.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they showed and then he also said, like, so they were planning to announce that game 6 months before it actually got announced. And, like, they were all set with a trailer mm-hmm. at TGS, and then Capcom decided to announce DMZ instead.
Oh.
And so they delayed it for 6 months. So that trailer never got released, so he showed the whole trailer.
Oh, nice.
GDC,
yeah,
which is
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I there was a news story later on about how he said that, like, 30% of the game got cut because it was just too mm-hmm. big. Like,
right.
I can't fathom yep. that game being any bigger than it already is.
I think he said it was cut in half, wasn't it?
Oh, it was
and
cut
that they,
in half?
They used to have hang gliders in the game, but that was... Yeah, I'm
what?
Pretty sure.
They should have kept the hang glider. I mean, at least some sort of fast travel in that game.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they basically, yeah, they had a budget that they had to get to, and
right.
you know, they weren't even close.
Yeah, so it's apparently it's really tough to get a game approved in Capcom, like a game that size to get approved in at Capcom. So he was explaining the process and all of that.
Well, he said that he had a lot of trouble as well with the, like, porn system, like, trying to explain that and, like, get people to understand it.
And then there was, so the president of Gung Ho, which there was the guys who make Puzzle and Dragons,
yes.
Which is right now probably the most successful game in Japan, I think, as far as a mobile game anyway.
It's the the Clash of Clans of Japan.
Yeah, it's making like millions of dollars a day, basically. He had a really cool speech. So my image of this guy, I had never met him before. Before the GDC, I just kind of expected like your typical Japanese like shacho, like a dude in a suit with like greasy hair and just like basically makes decisions in the public and everything. Nothing like that at all. He came out with a camera strapped to his head. He had a t-shirt, a Puzzle and Dragons t-shirt on. Yeah, he was funny. Actually, he was cool.
You know, he actually wanted to show up in his samba outfit.
Samba
outfit. Because
what is a samba outfit? Like leotard
like,
or
no, like feathers and stuff.
Because is he from Osaka?
No. Actually, I don't know.
Oh, that seems like a very Osaka
so
thing.
They practiced. So they took part of the Samba Festival.
Yeah.
That's held once a year in Japan.
The whole company.
The whole company,
the whole company,
yeah. And so he made like a real deal like Samba outfit. So he wanted to wear that. But like everybody in his company was like, oh, please don't do this. Yeah. Like, begging him not to do it. So.
Whatever, I do what I want.
But the crowd, the room was packed. A lot of Japanese people too. And I think because everybody kind of wanted to come and see what this guy who's in charge of basically the most, you know, successful game in Japan had to say. And the interesting thing was he really didn't talk numbers at all. He said right off the top he wasn't there to talk about like monetization and stuff and like how they, you know, their charts and their money, whatever. He just wanted to explain how like they're all about designing games to be good and fun. It almost sounds like a commercial when I say it, but like, you know, basically their point is they make games to be good. And then when that's all done, they think about the monetization stuff.
Yeah, and that's kind of how it should be, right?
Yeah.
Well, it should be like that, but not a lot of people could be like that because, you know, people don't have like money in the bank. Like people don't make the kind of money they make every day. So
But I think
it's difficult for people to do that.
When you think the other way around, that's when you get stuff like, you know, the card-based, like, just hit the go button.
Right. There's so many garbage card games like that in Japan. Right.
But another thing I liked what he said was that he just admitted, like, without even hesitating or anything, saying that it was all luck.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that must have been, like, luck and timing must have been a huge factor of their success. And he's, like, not afraid to admit that at all. So
yeah, that was a bit of a theme at GDC. There were a number of talks about, like, mobile games and stuff and kind of how to hit it big on iOS and everything. And a lot of it is luck, really. It's just, like, timing. I mean, it's a little bit of skill, but it's a lot of luck.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is with those microtransaction games. It's a huge risk to, like, leave the monetization to the end. There was an iOS basketball game that had millions of downloads.
Yeah, Gasketball.
There you go, Gasketball. And they were losing money hand over fist because they had made the game and then only thought how to monetize it later. And they just got it wrong and people wouldn't buy it.
Right. Well, I think in Puzzle and Dragons' case, that game was actually made before the whole IAP thing sort of took off. So I think in their mind, it probably was originally going to be like a paid app or something like that, you know? Yeah. So it might have been a little different for them. But, you know, they also do console stuff. So he introduced Suda51 because they recently bought Grasshopper. Right.
They also did the Ragnarok.
Yeah, they made the Ragnarok game. And they own Game Arts, you know, who made Grandia and Lunar and those stuff. So they do a lot of stuff. But, you know, I was really impressed. This is a company that until now was kind of honestly like, not even on my radar.
True.
And now I feel like this is a company we should keep an eye on. The guy, the CEO is young and pretty smart. So yeah, I really enjoyed that talk.
And it seems like a lot of people were paying attention. Well, you know, keeping an eye on him.
Totally.
Because his speech was, I think, the most popular one throughout,
the ones of all the Japanese ones.
Japanese stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So who else? Well, there were two more. There was
Hashimoto's
Last Reward.
Oh, well, yeah. There was, Uchikoshi-san.
I haven't heard anything about that speech, but
that was the
it?
One of all of our eight speeches that I only caught the very end of. I wasn't there in the beginning.
Oh.
So.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, well, he talked about so a scenario-based RPG game.
Yeah.
So
he's talking about visual novels.
Visual novels. He was explaining what a visual novel is and how to make visual novels.
Oh, that's kind of cool because that is definitely a genre that is unexplored in the States. It's like a very Japanese genre.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So
yeah, there's even like
subclassifications
of it in Japan too. It's kind of like they'll call some of them adventure games and some of the visual novels. But when you to the few Westerners who even know about it, it's kind of just visual novels all thrown into like one category.
Aren't his like escape room or something like that? Like VLR is escape room. That's a type, right?
Okay. Well, that was his own self-made thing, but
yeah.
Cool. And then the last
his script was actually pretty interesting
because,
you know, he's a scenario writer, right? Mm. So his script had like, So if the crowd reacts in this way, I will say this. And if they react in this way.
He had a multiple choice.
Yeah, he had a multiple choice. Yeah, that's amazing. Throughout the whole script. It was pretty awesome.
Was that impressive up on the screen?
No, it wasn't up on the screen. So we were going through the script and we were like, okay, which one to say? Like, oh, this one. He said this. So I think you're supposed to say this.
Oh, my God. That's so hilarious.
Pretty hilarious.
Did he tell the crowd that he was doing that?
No,
that's actually really, that's kind of like the way you design those kind of games, too, in a way.
Yeah, it was
multiple possibilities.
Like, you know, the first thing was so there was a nomination. So there was the GDC Awards. The GDC Awards were given out to people the day before Uchikoshi-san's speech.
Right.
And his game was nominated.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, in case we win the award, I will say this.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did they win an award or no?
No,
that's too bad. He did an awesome thing too on YouTube. I don't know if any of you saw before the show where he went and like, did the Japanese thing where you like throw the money in and pray for winning the award.
Oh,
it was on GameSpot. Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah. It was super, I was like, this guy is awesome.
The fact that they were nominated is I think a really big thing for Japan and in visual novels in general.
But, I mean, it's good that they're getting recognized. You know? And he was tweeting about it and stuff. He seems cool too. Like I came out of this with like a really a stronger appreciation for some of these sort of kind of unknown guys. You know, I mean, they're known here in Japan, but they're not known in the West. But I'm really glad that we were able to get them out to GDC and get their faces out there.
Yeah. He was super nervous.
Really?
Like he was...
Dude, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm nervous now. and there's only five
you have to be
you.
Nervous. There's like six of us here.
The last one
is Hashimoto-san from Marvelous.
Marvelous.
And he spoke about how to make RPG games.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He talked about... So he's the guy who is in charge of Rune Factory. And Harvest Moon and that stuff.
Okay.
And it was kind of a general talk his.
He was there last year too, right? Or
No.
Was that another Harvest Moon guy?
That was Wada.
Oh, that was Wada, okay. Yeah. He was like that was a classic postmortem. But
I see.
Yeah. That was a very touching speech, I remember. Like, there were some people in the crowd that had tears in their eyes.
Wow. Harvest Moon's got some fans.
Did you get any? Yeah, I know. I've heard about people like actually proposing using like the blue feather and
oh really?
Yeah. So in general, did everything like, were you happy with the turnout?
Yeah, it went great.
It went
like
great.
The Japanese to English translation, I think we did a kick-ass job. Like anybody?
Yeah, I was in the audience for all of them. So I didn't go last year. Which was the first year we did it. This is my first time there as I was one of the critics. I'm one of the people who was complaining why we had to change it in the first place.
Yeah.
And I had all of them were great. Like they were Hiroko and Kyoko, who's not here. She's one of our main interpreters.
Yeah.
Did a kick-ass job.
And
really
Mike Sekine, freelancer.
Yeah, I'll do the other way around. So we did two talks from Japanese, English into Japanese.
Yeah, they were only two, but
We don't have to talk about them too much because, you know, but I mean, they're not really.
Yeah,
this is a Japanese podcast.
This is Japanese game panic is what we are.
But no, it was good.
If there is anybody in the crowd listening to any of those speeches, let us know if you like the interpretation.
Or even better, let GDC know. Respond to those emails they send out.
If you liked it.
Yes. If you didn't like it,
just tell us.
Damn opinions to yourself.
I will say, GDC, I haven't been in GDC in 4 years because of various reasons. Last year, it was Monster Hunter that kept me back. The year before, it was another game. I think it might have been Tales of Graces. I forget.
Or Nier. Maybe.
But I haven't been able to go. And I, you know, I used to go all the time. And to be able to go back this year and kind of just absorb it all up was really amazing.
Mm.
The show was fantastic. There was so much great stuff there. I mean, GDC is always like the highlight of, you know, all the industry shows. I know you're like feeling really upset that you weren't there.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, watching my Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rest of the office can attest to this and saying like, oh man, Rube's such good fun. And actually one of my, I was thinking about a nickname for John and one of them was like best friends in the whole wide world. Cause like after the EGM party, he's like, oh, these are my best friends of the whole wide world. I'm just sitting there like, yeah, what about Japan? All the tired people.
Dude, those guys are like my family, man. Yeah. Those, I grew up with them.
Yeah.
I literally, I didn't go to college.
Yeah,
I went to EGM.
They're your family. We're not.
I grew up with these guys.
Where is new family,
JJ? I'm just fucking with you.
So I should give a quick shout out to Dan Shushu. He's my super long time, like...
Your real family.
Yeah, he's like my brother, and, my Chinese brother. And he got engaged. So we had like this big elaborate surprise party where it wasn't for him, but he basically was proposing to his girlfriend, and she didn't know. She thought she was just coming out to see me and Mark before we were coming back to Japan. So he had this crazy elaborate setup, sent out this email with, like, you know, all these instructions and a map of, like, where she was going to walk to get there and what time people were going to go outside and do all this junk. It was great. Yeah. So congrats to those guys. Yeah, got to see the whole EGM crew together. The old school EGM
crew. Don't clap. I'm talking to you. So anyways, let's talk about the games we've been playing. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about here. A lot of it, unfortunately, maybe to some of our listeners, is iOS. But
that's
let's
okay, man. You know what? Lately, I've been playing more iOS games.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know me with the Apple Utopia. I'm all about that, but
Hashtag Apple Utopia.
I know that's right. That's another thing that happens when Mark is the host. We're not allowed to talk about iOS. So,
let's start off with a topic everybody's not tired of hearing about: Monster Hunter Ultimate. Or 3 Ultimate, whatever.
Are we talking about Monster Hunter?
Yeah, because Tony is a first-time Monster Hunter, and he's been playing it a lot. And complaining about it to me as he's like his second choice for his nickname was Battered Wife.
Battered Wife. Is this supposed to characterize my relationship with Monster Hunter?
Yes,
now?
Basically.
I suppose. I don't know. I mean, I have to admit that, okay, I took Mark's and yours advice, and I thought, okay, I'll take the gamble. I'll give this game 12 hours, and if it doesn't hook me, well, I just wasted $40, but what the heck? I'll just let that fly. Actually, no, really, what tipped it over wasn't you guys who tried to, you know, said to give me the, told me to give the game a chance, but rather what I was thinking is because of Mark's explanation last week was that, look, this game is wonderful if you have people to play it with, and that's where you'll see where the charm is. But the problem was, of course, I have a 3DS. I don't have a Wii U.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I also have the US version because I got it off the eShop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I would have at the time, since I hadn't bought it, I would have gotten it off the eShop. I don't know whether or not I would have been able to play with other people in Japan.
Mm.
As far as I can tell, I've only street passed with John so far.
You can't, there's no connectivity with the Japanese version, unfortunately. There will be with the European version, not right now, but in the future, at least the Wii U version, you'll be able to play with European players, which is awesome.
So the idea was, okay, well, if I can handle this game by itself without kind of any interaction with any other players, just by my own self, and if I like it enough, maybe it will convince me to pick up a Japanese 3DS. Thank you, Nintendo, for region locking your 3DS.
Yeah.
And Monster Hunter 4 when it comes out. And then I can play with everyone. Yeah. Right? So, I mean, that's the idea. It's like, if I can enjoy this game as it is right now, imagine how much more I will enjoy 4 when it comes out.
Right.
Yeah. And?
Are you ever getting a Wii U or no?
I don't think so, at least not at the moment. I mean, I don't even own a Wii, but now I want to go back into the back catalogs and play old Wii games. But yeah, like, as far as the Wii U is concerned, I'm not certain just yet. With the 3DS, there are games that I actually want to play. Okay, here's how I found out that the game essentially hooked me.
Okay,
so I've had my 3DS for, I don't know, a couple of months now, ever since Christmas.
We're looking at it right now, by the way. He's got the Ultra Frankenstick XL.
Dude is totally...
Wait, you're jumping ahead!
Okay. Oh, no, spoilers!
Go on with your narrative, Tony.
Thank you. So, I've had my 3DS since, like, pretty much, like, since New Year's, because JJ was kind enough to pick up a 3DS for me in the States, because me thinking I'm going to move back eventually, might as well get an American 3DS, brought it back for me. And I'm like, oh, what games can I play in this? And he's all like, there's Super Mario 3D Land. Okay. And I was like, oh, yeah, Ocarina of Time's on here, too. I guess I can, you know, try that out, you know, because I heard that the 3DS version is great. Uh-huh. Been playing it. And it's like, it's okay. I'm having an okay time with my 3DS.
Right.
As soon as I get Monster Hunter, though, first time ever I've ever played my 3DS until, like, the batteries run down.
I know that feel, bro. That happened to me with Super Mario 3D Land. That was when I realized, like, okay, I actually like 3DS.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, that's when I realized, like, okay, like, I liked 3DS before, just, you know, as a thing that I had, but it didn't take up a significant amount of my time. Like, when I went to Shinagawa to go renew, like, my visa details and whatnot, I played the entire time I was waiting. I came into the office, played a little bit more. On the way back home on the train, I played even more. And I noticed that, oh my gosh, my battery's dying.
There's a red light.
There's a red light. I've never seen it before. What do I do?
So that's what happens.
That's when I found out that, oh, yeah, I think Monster Hunter has me.
Awesome.
So, I knew that it would.
Yeah, and like you mentioned earlier, like, you know, I thought, like, okay, here's one complaint that sure. I still have that I probably won't ever not have. Is the swimming is really bad.
Well, in Forid, there is no swimming, so...
Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah. I hate the swimming, too.
The thing is, they fixed the swimming to some extent on the 3DS version, because from the Wii version, at least, because... What is it? I have to think now. There's some control method on the 3DS where the swimming is not so bad. Oh, the target camera. Right, because... Right. Do you use the target camera, by the way?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because I've heard several people saying they're not using it and you're doing it wrong. Like, that thing is meant to be used.
Yeah.
Once you have that and learn how to use it, there's no reason to ever go back.
Well, though, on the Wii U version,
it's less important.
But underwater, it's...
No, it's still super useful. Yeah. It's also useful just because you cannot... Just one last thing to think about. You just have to tap that button when you want to focus on the monster, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, the swimming is primarily the reason why I ended up getting a Circle Pad Pro. For the XL, I have the 3DS XL.
So you're totally sporting the Frankenstein.
Were you not using the virtual D-pad on the bottom screen?
I tried to, but it was not working as well as I would have liked. And so, like, you know, I kept getting hit by monsters. So I was like, okay, I need to fix this somehow. And yeah, I got the Circle Pad Pro for, like, I think basically like 1,200 yen, which is really cheap.
It's like $12, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and ever since then, it's like, okay, now. It's playable.
So you think it's comfortable and you're enjoying it?
Yeah, I really, really like it. The only problem is it's like it adds extra weight and I can't pack it in my bag comfortably.
So right.
It is awfully huge.
It's really big. Massive. It's ugly.
Can I hold it?
Yeah, sure.
it's gigantic for your hands. It's probably like too heavy.
Here's something I kind of was thinking about. Like, you know, like
Wii U control.
It would be really nice if I could actually play with other people.
Right.
But like, Why is it that it doesn't have why doesn't it have online play? Is there any specific reason why it doesn't?
Well, son, once upon a time, Capcom was stuck 20 years in the past with everything they did.
See, this is my beef here. Where it's like you call it Monster Hunter Tri Ultimate. Why would you call it Ultimate when it's not even optimal?
Well, that's true. That's a really good point.
Oh, snap!
But to be fair. You know, originally this was just going to be a Wii U game. Like, they decided to bring out the 3DS version after. But the 3DS version, you know, in Japan, as you know, sadly, Japan, it doesn't really matter if it's online because most people play in the schoolyard or, you know, at work or, you know, in the break room
or cafes
whatever.
Where you
people
can...
get together and play, and it's not hard to do that. But, you know, with the US version, you know, that's why they added the support where you can hook it up to your Wii U, like kind of ad hoc party style. It's not convenient at all because you have to have an Ethernet cable. But I mean, there's an option there at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice and everything. And like, I don't know, I just feel like it's such a missed opportunity because I've been hearing so much good press about this Monster Hunter, which is new for me to hear Westerners talking about Monster Hunter glowingly. And so it's like, oh, you know, if these people with influence who have like audiences in the West that like, and you know, not just like back in North America, but in Europe as well, like if they're hearing all this great stuff about Monster Hunter and they can't even play with each other because they're separated by vast distances, then it feels like such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, from a technical perspective, I'm not quite sure why they couldn't just patch implement online. I'm guessing it's deeper than that or something. Maybe one of our listeners who is actually technically oriented can tell us why, but you know, I don't know why they didn't do that, but
maybe one of our listeners who is, you know, technically savvy could actually make something that I could, I don't know, jump on my computer and like connect with other people. Like,
well, if your 3DS was hacked,
like Tamachi or something.
That used to be, you know, back.
That's what people did on PSP.
Yeah, on the PSP days, we used X-Link Kai.
Yeah.
There may be something like that for this now, but I don't know.
Well, you'd have to hack your 3DS too. I wouldn't recommend anybody do that. But I will say, like, you know, it shocked me when they announced that Monster Hunter 4 was going to be online in 3DS. Yeah. Like, completely shocked
me.
JJ told me at TGS while we were waiting in line to play, and I was like, yeah, whatever.
It's one of those things because we thought that it happened with 3, because in Japan, like, the word online could also mean local multiplayer.
Right.
Which is like, because so when they announced it for 4, we were all like, are we sure this actually means through the internet across
right. the right. Well, they were really teasing people too, because then they did like internet, but then there was like an asterisk, and if you looked at it, that just meant that you could download DLC quests,
right.
which are actually, as far as I could tell, already on the cart, because yeah. it doesn't, it, all it is like an unlock thing, because it doesn't, it takes like 2 seconds to download.
This sounds familiar. Wait, what company were we talking about again? Was it Capcom?
Oh, okay. Yes. But at least they're free.
But let me say one thing. We have gotten as and I'm really super happy and a little bit proud, to be honest, but like we have gotten tons of feedback from listeners and fans of the show, of people who bought Monster Hunter because we've been harping about it for like 2 years now. And I would say 1% of them actually don't like it. Most people yeah. have actually fallen in love. When I was at GDC, we were out with like Patrick Klepek from Giant Bomb, and we were talking to some other guys in the industry, and they were all into it too. And they actually like were like actually legitimately have like broken past that barrier that everybody, you know, goes up against, and actually got into the game and really enjoying it. Mm. And I was even hearing them preaching to like other people, which was like, yes, like mission yeah. accomplished. So,
it's like a virus that spreads.
It is. I'm super happy to hear that people are playing it and enjoying it. A lot of people are buying Roy, friend of the show, Roy Blakely's book.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Which is like a kind of a starter guide for Monster Hunter. All right, I bought that. Awesome.
Yep.
Did you use the Giant Bomb code? Or?
No, I just paid the $9.
Okay.
I didn't know that there was a code, actually. But,
there's a Giant Bomb code, I believe, that gives you 20% off. So, well, yeah, look that up.
It's still well worth it for people just getting into Monster Hunter. I mean, mm-hmm. $9.
So it helped you out? Did you refer to it a bunch, or...?
A bunch. Actually, it's not a very long read. I, like, pretty much read it in two sittings, and I knew pretty much what I needed to do after that. And then everything else, like, I know JJ is not a freely available resource right. for people.
He's been emailing. Like, there was once I was asleep, and I was woken up by a series of tweets about how he was fighting Kuropeko or something like that. And I'm just like...
Wow.
I appreciate this enthusiasm, but I really don't need to sleep.
Well, you didn't
hours
even say that. I've played so far, I think when I turned it on this morning to check, it was like 34, 35
nice.
Hours.
All right, so you're in there.
You're still at the very beginning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm still at the very beginning, mostly just because like it's so grindy.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, part of the reason why it doesn't bother me too much, though, is because it kind of does tickle, like, my Dark Souls bone.
Right.
And, like...
totally.
You know, it's like, okay, fighting the bosses is kind of like Dark Souls, just that you get to fight them more often right. than, like, the one
and
time
their,
Dark Souls.
And their AI is better.
Oh, yeah, I would argue... it's not much of an argument. It's pretty fact. Mm. But, I mean, the boss battles in Monster Hunter are amazing, and they're way better than the bosses in Dark Souls. Not to dig on Dark Souls. It's a different kind of game, but because the monsters have amazing AI.
The DLC monsters in Dark Souls are close to that level.
Mm.
They're pretty crazy. Yeah, the boss fights in Monster Hunter are just like, you know, you play them not just to get the stuff that you get at the end, but you play them to get better, and you learn them, and then, you know,
it's visceral. It feels very real. I mean, it feels like, you know, actual combat with something that is not an idiot, basically, and that's what's super enjoyable.
Yeah, right. like last podcast I was saying, like, you know, I haven't really played very many new games because I've mostly just been playing Dark Souls. It's, you know, I had this thing where it's like, I'm playing a different game and I'm thinking, why am I playing this when I could just be playing more Dark Souls?
Mm.
I think, essentially, Monster Hunter has weaned me off Dark Souls.
Oh, cool.
I mean, nice. I still love Dark Souls to death, but
that makes me
you
sad.
Know, it's like, okay, now I have something else now in Monster Hunter, and it seems, since I'm going to be playing by myself for quite a while,
right.
I'm going to be at it for a long time.
Good.
Mm. And cool. I hear your brother is also slightly addicted.
Yeah, my brother, who is currently interning at... Camouflage.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a
courtesy
he's
of Mark McDonald.
He's got a office Monster Hunter party going.
Oh, apparently. Kick ass.
Not including Ryan though. Apparently
really?
Ryan told
Ryan Mark, has played in the past. Yeah, Ryan was into it. In fact, Ryan got Mark into it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Is that so?
Yep.
Well, yeah. it's funny because I don't know, maybe conflicting information with my brother.
Or maybe Nozomi did.
My brother is telling me.
Fiance.
My brother's like, yeah, so Mark hears that you're not a fan of Monster Hunter. This was like a couple weeks ago. I was like, yeah, I'm not. And he's like, he says you're a brave man working at 8-4 not being a fan of Monster Hunter.
Oh, right, Ryan said that.
And, yeah, nice. And I was like, huh, well, he likes Dark Souls, so tell him I think he has great taste. and he's like, yeah, he said, like, yeah, Ryan was saying something about as soon as Mark comes down, he's going to set him straight about Monster Hunter. And I thought, what does that mean?
Interesting. But, yeah, well, maybe Ryan sort of fell off. But, I mean, they used to play together. Like, Ryan yeah, yeah. and his girlfriend, or his fiance now.
Well, they got really frustrated while they were playing the game,
right.
playing Monster Hunter. And
right. They were playing
Freedom
Unite.
One of them threw their PSPs on the wall.
That was Mark.
Wow. That was Mark, yeah. yeah. out of frustration.
I could see Mark doing doing that.
He was fighting Kezu.
Right. And, okay. Yeah.
But okay. Well, we should probably move on.
Wait. One last thing. I've noticed the thing about the text. Everyone says the text is kind of unreadable, but fiddling around with it, like with the 3D slider, I've noticed that it actually gets to be a little more readable. Because sometimes the text is actually quite clear. You can read it. But in certain instances, some of the text gets really blurred. I think what's going on is that it has something to do with like the 3D effects of like, you know, the 3DS or what they plan to. What they're probably doing is they have two different types of text that they're, you know, placing over each other so that it looks stereoscopic.
Oh, you're overthinking it. You're overthinking it. It's not that. As much as I would like to believe that's the case, the case is simply that the text is not implemented
but
very well.
Just trust me, and any because you have it now. I know you do.
Sure.
So next time you see the text as being as unreadable as it is, turn on your 3D slider, kind of turn it up kind of high, and then.
Well, John can't really.
I was gonna say, well, Tony, I'll have you know, I can't actually see the 3D on the 3DS, so I have it off all the time.
That is
good advice. Try it out. Yeah. If you see 3D, maybe it'll help. I have two more things, really quick things to say about Monster Hunter before we go. One, and JJ, you should put this in the show notes, but Andrew Alfonso, friend of the show, and the guy on the Capcom side who worked with me, basically, to kind of oversee the localization of this game, wrote a really good article on his blog recently about how Monster Hunter is very similar to Dark Souls and Street Fighter. I was really impressed with this, actually, because he's totally right. I never thought of it this way, but he kind of likened the different weapons in Monster Hunter to basically picking up a different character in Street Fighter.
Totally.
And how you have to kind of learn all the ins and outs of that character, and each character plays completely differently. It's a really good read. JJ will link to it on the show notes.
Yep.
And the last thing is I happen to be wearing a kick-ass Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate shirt right now that Capcom was kind enough to give us, and they gave us a couple extra. So we'll find a way to give those away.
And also we got a free copy of the, I believe this is Brady Games.
It is.
Monster Hunter 3.
The digital guide.
Digital guide. Do we want to just give this away, or do we want to wait, or...
Well, first, why don't we say thanks to Ben Kim, who was cool enough to send us the code.
Yeah.
His Wii U name is Daigen. I hope he doesn't mind us telling you all that. but for the code itself, we'll hide it in the show notes. Well, I don't even know if we'll hide it, but we'll stick it in the show notes somewhere, kind of on its own. Just find it and figure it
out. Maybe I'll bold the letters. I don't know what I'll do.
Yeah, and we'll get back to giving those red shirts away sometime soon.
Cool. All right, and so...
Moving on, now that nobody is left listening, we can get into whatever we want to talk about.
Why don't we do a quick... So Dragon Quest X U came out, John. How did that go?
You know, what is Japan's deal with, like, making shit online just incredibly hard to... Like, you have to, like, to play this game... So let's backtrack. I have the Wii version of Dragon Quest X.
Yes.
And if you buy the Wii U version, there's a promotion thing where you can get it for half price because you already own the Wii version.
Right.
You can get the download version. But to do this, first you have to buy it from Square Enix Direct from their website. Then you get a code that you put in. Then you put the code in and it downloads the game. Then you have to get a registration code, which is a separate thing, from the Nintendo Network, which you have to go and log in and get the code there, put that in. You have to do like 10 different steps to get the game working, which is just like, what are you doing? Like, just make it simple.
Why can't I just hit the button?
Yeah.
And have it work.
The Dragon Quest button on your Wii.
It like reminds me of when Metal Gear Solid 4 came out with like all
with the online, the double like login twice. Yeah. Anyway, but you know, complaining aside, I did get it. I only got to play for about 15 minutes, but I haven't played in 14 weeks. I found that out just by logging in and getting my gold, because they give you gold every week.
Oh, right.
I got 14 weeks worth. But the reason I haven't played is because I was waiting for the Wii U version. And I'm scared it's gonna hook me again, because you can just play the whole thing on the gamepad.
Does it look really good on your TV?
It looks good on the TV. Yeah, it's smooth. It's, you know, it's HD. It's like an HD Wii game. So make of that what you will. But at least it's got a nice art style. But playing it on the Wii U gamepad is really, really great. I'm worried, but that's it. I only played for like 10 minutes, so I can't really give impressions or anything.
Okay. Do you still have your... Oh, never mind.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if he still has his house.
Yeah, you still have everything. I mean, it's just... It's an MMO, so all your data is server-side.
You didn't have any squatters?
No, I didn't have any squatters.
Okay.
I did go back and look at my house to see if, like... I don't even know if people can leave stuff in your house or whatever. I've never really used it. I went back to check it out. It was the same as I left it 14 weeks ago.
Well, that's nice. No dust or bugs or... Okay. So let's move into iOS land. We being me, Dan, who's pumping his fists.
Pump louder.
So Dan here has. Did you talk about last week how Dan has more iOS games than anybody on the
site? Yeah, Tom made a note to mention that Dan has so many iOS games that he has no more pages for them.
Right. I didn't even know that could happen.
Yeah.
I often delete them just to make more space. And then today it filled up again because there was a bunch of new releases today that were pretty,
pretty
good.
Quality.
What happens
releases.
When it fills up? Is it like you can't make folders anymore?
It goes into the next page on your iPhone that you cannot get to. So the only way to actually open it is to go to the search that's to the left of the.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Crazy.
How many? And that's all in folders?
They're not all in folders, but I utilize a lot of folders.
Could you? Would you?
I hear you giggling.
I just think that Dan might have an addiction problem with iOS games.
Well, I wonder. Like, do you have any idea how many games you have? If you had to count, or like,
I mean, I could just open
my over 1,000, right?
iTunes
or
and check it.
Well, no, but I just that's crazy. That's a lot of iOS games. There's not that many good iOS games. I'm just gonna say that. I'm gonna put that out there. Like, most of them are not good.
He will sit there with you.
Well,
for an
I mean,
hour.
That's just like saying. Most of the PlayStation games were not that good.
No. There's like opinions and then there's facts. Most of the iOS games out there are not that good.
I forgot to go. 8.4 I hate iOS podcast.
That's not true. I've preached the Apple utopia for many, many movies.
Right.
In fact, IGN's April Fool's joke showed a little bit of a foray into the future. They showed an image of what's to come.
Which, by the way, I thought the actual look of that system was...
IGN.
I'd buy that
Go
system.
To IGN and look up their April Fool's joke. They had a thing about iPlay, which is supposedly like the Apple... console. It's actually pretty funny. I give them credit.
Right.
All the games were Angry Birds games.
Yeah. And there was weird camera angles and stuff. So we've all been playing Nimble Quest. Nimble Quest is a combination of Snake, that game you used to play on your school's Mac when you had nothing to do in between classes.
Or your Nokia.
Yeah, your
on your Nokia.
Phone.
You know, where you go around and eat pellets and then your snake gets longer. And then if you run into an enemy or you run into yourself, you die, and that's the end. And then it combines it with like RPG tropes and
combat,
elements.
I guess.
Combat, yeah.
You're basically fighting enemies that appear.
Right. You pick a character and then you walk around and you kill enemies, and then sometimes those enemies spawn more RPG characters like mages, skeletons, blah, 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 and they join your party. I'm making air quotes here because it's just like a line, like a snake. And then
it's a conga line, JJ.
Yeah, it's like a conga
it's
like
a party
line.
In your iPhone.
It's like an RPG conga line. And then those guys will help you kill more enemies to get more gems and all sorts of things.
Hmm.
And it's really fun.
It's actually really addictive. And, you know, I was telling somebody today, but like this is probably so I think iOS games are finally I know we give them a lot of shit and justifiably so, because there are a lot of garbage games on iOS because there's no standard, nothing stopping anybody from putting crap out. But you know, I think lately people are starting to get it and starting to figure out what it is that makes good games. I mean, you've got games like Clash of Clans that are addicting like everybody in the world, and you've got these games that actually have quality in them. And I feel like Nimble Quest is the first game, the first free-to-play game I've ever played where I stopped and was like, you know what? I'm going to buy some shit, even though I don't need it or want it.
Right.
Because I feel like the guys who made this deserve some money.
Yeah, you know totally. I mean?
It's almost like Kickstarter or something. It's like where you want to support something you think is cool. It's like, these guys made an awesome game. How can I give them money? So I'm probably going to like buy the $10 thing of like gems or whatever.
Nice,
I don't even care. I don't feel like I need it. The game is totally playable without it. You don't ever have to really buy stuff to enjoy the game.
That's one thing about Nimblebit, the developers of this game. Their past few games, Pocket Planes. And Tiny Tower?
Yep,
Tiny Tower. Yeah.
They were both free-to-play games, but I never felt like there wasn't ever this like moment of hitting the paywall and being like, oh, fuck, now I've got to spend money.
Right.
Yeah.
The feeling of being forced to pay money is not fun, especially when you're not used to that kind of games.
Right.
Yeah.
It's always the moment in a free-to-play game where I'm like, okay, this is where I stop. But and especially in NimbleQuest, I've never felt that. And much like in Dota 2, I do feel like, you know, this is a great game. I should just spend a little money because I've been playing for so long and, you know.
Yeah, I actually felt that way with Puzzle and Dragons too. I played that a lot at first. I mean, I actually stopped playing that because I felt I wasn't good enough, which is not like a common thing, but like I felt like the game was so deep that it was just like hard for me to grasp like all the little intricate details. But I never felt like I hit the paywall and had to stop, you know what I mean? But Nimble Quest, yeah, is really good, and like the graphics are kind of old school 2D pixely,
a little Super Nintendo-y.
The music's really good.
a little European feel. I don't know.
Did anyone else get tired of Ridiculous Fishing? I loved it, but I'm like done with it. Like, I feel like there's nothing
else to do. I wouldn't say I'm tired with it, but I don't play it as much as I did just because I feel like I reached the peak of my skill level.
Right, right.
Yeah. I can't get any better.
I'm just so awesome.
How arrogant are you, Dan? I'm not that good, and I just like looking at the leaderboards.
Right.
And I know that there are some secret strategies going around online that people guarding.
Really?
But I think I've got one of them, and I still can't get anywhere near like any of the high score charts. Not even with my Game Center friends, which is a very small list.
That was another iOS game that was great, like legitimately took advantage of the platform in a smart way, the way like Super Hexagon did. Like, there's not many of those, but that was another one. But yeah, I'm kind of done with it. But NimbleQuest is the new hotness.
Are you in a guild?
No, I'm not in a guild. Well, so what is the advantage of getting in a guild? I know that was like Pocket Planes had those too.
Yeah, right? So basically it's like in Pocket Planes and Tiny Tower, you have, well, I don't know if Tiny Tower didn't have it, but you join a guild like NeoGAF has a guild.
Okay.
And in this game
how do you get in the guild?
Just type it in and you
have to go to the arena section where you have to pay a token every time you play.
Right.
Okay.
But so you pay a token and you play and then you just kill as many enemies as you can. And I think the sum of all of the enemies that your guild has killed at the end of the day will be tallied into like a worldwide ranking. And depending on where you fall in the ranking, you get prizes.
Okay.
So your whole guild gets prizes. Yeah, I'm in the NeoGAF guild.
I'll get in the NeoGAF guild.
Yeah, then. And like you'll get like, well, we're like ranked number 6 or something. Like Touch Arcade has 2 guilds and they're like ranked 1 and 4.
We have to split
that's
it
not
up.
Cool.
Yeah, that's so fucked up. But anyways, you get, you know, I got like 40 coins the first day and, you know.
Really?
Yeah. And I just.
Hiroko, have you played this one yet?
No.
I think you'd like it.
I think you would like it too. Yeah. Okay. Did you play fishing? You played Ridiculous Fishing a little bit, right? Or did you?
No, I don't think okay. so.
Have you been playing any like weird bald men games or anything recently?
No, not lately. Oh. I've been playing pretty straightforward games nowadays. Oh, okay.
I wonder, do you guys listening, do you get like upset when we talk about iPhone games? I know there's like this weird like like section of people who listen to certain podcasts where they get really upset when people talk about iOS, and I don't really get that. Like,
yeah.
I absolutely, like I've said a million times, there's a whole lot of garbage out there, and you call a spade, right? There's not a great platform for finding lots of quality games, but the ones that are good are totally worth playing.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best thing about Daniel, because I think on the last podcast, I was like, yeah, I don't like mobile games at all. And then Mark was like, you don't like, you know, runners? And I'm like, there's no such thing as a good runner. Next thing I know, Dan, next couple of days, he's like, Tony, have you tried this? Or how about this? Or how about this? It's like, this is one of the problems I have with mobile games. Like, sometimes I'll be like just sitting on my phone, like, okay, I need something good to just play on my phone just to either pass some time or like, you know, something that like, you know, I could actually get into and play often.
Sure.
And like, you look online and stuff like that and see like a top 10 list from dated whenever, like a year or two ago. Mm. And it's like a lot of these lists, you know, a lot of them, some of them have good games on them, but some of them are just filler. Right. Daniel, on the other hand, seems like he's been there. And so right. I, for one, he's appreciate his addiction because it helps me.
Right, right.
So everyone follow Dan on Twitter and ask him about mobile games because he probably has one for you.
Yeah. he's the iOS game
concierge or sommelier.
Right.
Sommelier. That's a good
way. He should get a job with Apple.
He can tell you what iOS game goes with your dinner.
I should point out evangelist. Though, that when Dan tried to sell Nimble's Quest to me, he said one sentence and it was just, it's a bit like Snake. And that was it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not downloading that.
You should play it.
You don't
it's
like
fun.
Snake? Snake was fun.
Yeah, Snake was good.
My version
I was in
of Snake
high school.
Was Snafu for Intellivision.
Oh, wow.
Represent.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, we should move on.
And also on the iOS side, Hiroko has been playing. Now, this is a game that's pretty much like a console game that may as well have been. I mean, it may as well have been on a console, but it's on iOS.
You think so?
I think so. I mean, it's like a console quality sort of. It's not like the other iOS games, as far as I know, but it's Year Walk.
Yeah.
Year Walk.
I thought you were talking about Clash of Clans. Okay. Yeah, no, Year Walk is. Mm.
So do you guys want to, Dan?
I'd actually like to hear what Hiroko and John have to say.
I haven't played it yet. I was going to download it, but I couldn't. You have to be on Wi-Fi.
I've only played it for like an hour.
Okay.
So I don't know if I'm like even playing it right or. But yeah, I could see the whole like awesome atmosphere and all that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just basically walking and Like every time I walk, like the path kind of changes and I could go to like different places, but I'm not like that far away from where I started yet. And I see like little things.
What like, is it? What is the game in a nutshell? Like, what do you, are you just walking? Is it just walking?
You're walking.
Bion must love this game.
Yeah. So you're walking in the snow and like you walk to a hut and then, so I've only talked to one person so far.
Like the woman?
The woman.
Yeah. I mean, the game isn't about like exploring this town and then talking to people.
Uh-huh.
It's basically a puzzle game. So you'll find okay. new areas and then you'll see, I have to solve this.
Yeah, I wasn't even
puzzle.
Sure what kind of a game it is. But yeah, I was starting to think, okay, this might be a puzzle game because I saw like things that look like hints. So I was like, okay, maybe I need to do something using this hint. But so it is a puzzle game.
Yeah, I'd say very much.
And yeah. So it's a paid game, right? It's a paid
yeah.
app. Or how much is it cost?
$3.99, I think.
Okay. I forget.
It's two or this game came up yeah. a couple times at GDC. Mm-hmm. One of them was in Cappy Nathan had a talk about how, like, you know, free-to-play is not necessarily the only way to go. And there's right. plenty of room for paid apps. And he brought up this game. And actually, that's why I tried
that's
to download
why,
it.
That's why, yeah, I downloaded oh, okay, it nice. As well.
But, are you using the companion app as well? Or did you download it?
No.
You don't need it, but it gives you kind of like a little background about the things that you run into in the game,
uh-huh.
like the lore, and
it's kind
of
like
kind
a look.
Of helps you immerse into the
really?
Into the world.
I might try it a couple more hours, and if I'm stuck, then I might use the companion.
Well, yeah. it doesn't give you hints or anything.
Uh-huh.
More like it just enriches the experience.
Yes,
right.
So, do you recommend me download?
I recommend it. It's free.
It's free.
So you cool, might cool. as well. And it's
no, it's that's not a matter of cost or anything. I don't want spoilers or anything, so that's
there's
why
no spoilers
I was hesitating to get.
So what's the other game you've been playing?
My other game is Clash of Clans.
Clash of Clans.
So this game is like came out of nowhere. Like, you know, it's
it
like,
didn't really come out of nowhere.
No, it came out of nowhere yeah. to us because yeah. it's not a thing in Japan yet anyway. But like in America, like this game is apparently like ridiculously huge. Yeah. And, you know, I saw people I respect, like Jeff Green and like, you know, people who really
right.
play a lot of games, like talking about it nonstop on Twitter. But it seems like Hiroko is the first one of us to actually really kind of get. Are you hooked on it, would you say? Or
I think I'm hooked on it.
Have it's you played like, a lot? Or
I've played a lot. It's, I don't know, kind of like, I've been playing it like how you would play Dobutsu no Mori. Like, you would go...
Animal Crossing.
Oh, Animal Crossing. Yes. Yeah, so you would play, you would, like, you know, play it, like, every day, like...
Right.
Just a few times a day. Yeah, yeah. So, and, yeah, my town is looking awesome, so I wanted to brag about it, but nobody here is really playing it, so... They can't appreciate the awesomeness of my town.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get into it. I need to actually sit down and spend a lot of time yeah. with it, but I will.
You don't really even have to think of like spending a lot of time with it. It's just kind of like, really kind of
sure,
like
sure.
Animal Crossing.
Well, what about you, Dan? Are you like into that one? Or?
I've played it. Maybe I've put a few hours into it. I think it's all right.
Okay.
Yeah, they're better.
I was going to play both Year Walk and Clash of Clans. But then Monster Hunter.
Good.
Yeah.
I can't argue
with
that.
I like to hear.
All right. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time, so we should keep on moving.
Okay, yeah. John, you keep saying that, but.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time. John's looking at his fake watch. And actually, you know what? That's pretty much. I mean, we have Dan and Tony have played a little bit of BioShock, but.
Oh, I don't want to talk about that yet.
Yeah, let's not talk about it.
I got my
yet.
Copy in the, when it came out.
I haven't played it. Yeah, Dan's just like. He's almost,
I almost finished with it.
Oh, no, really?
I kind of want to talk about the beginning just a little bit.
No.
So Tony was talking to me about the beginning the other day, and he was talking about how he thought it was weird that there was change all over the place. Yeah, Tony, you're being a little too nitpicky, I think.
Well, no, I mean that's the thing where it's
change?
Well,
you mean like money?
Like coins. Pocket change? Well, I had an interesting conversation with my brother, the same one that interns at Camouflage. Hi, Vinny.
How many brothers do you have?
Just one. Oh, okay. Just the one. But like, you know, he had a thing with like, you know, like how the AI didn't feel exactly up to snuff, and that's something that kind of disappointed him about it. And it's like I kind of thought like, well, you're, you know, it's doesn't seem like it would be any different from any other game. Like, you know, I think AI in there would be kind of, you know, the same, if not, you know, a little bit better, a little bit whatever. Anyways,
it's
felt
nitpicky. Standard.
It felt nitpicky.
Standard.
But then, like, you know, I started playing the game myself as well. And, like, you know, from the get-go, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Don't spoil anything, by the way.
Well, the only thing I'm going to spoil is that I started playing it, and immediately I was like, okay, yes, this is BioShock. Starts pretty much the same way as the first BioShock. And, you know, like, right trigger shoots, left trigger powers. That's how the buttons are mapped. And, like, you know,
very familiar.
It's a very kind of like, you know, there's C in the beginning, dude with like tattoo in or around his hands, you know, like
tattoos.
Yeah, tattoos in or around your hands. There's like, you know, what is that? Like a similar character to like, what's it? That Ryan dude in the
Andrew Ryan
in BioShock. I mean, like, it's very much like this feels exactly like BioShock. And also for me, a BioShock hallmark is motion sickness.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I know exactly what's going on here. But
like real, you get motion sick.
Yeah.
When you, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get motion sick when I play certain first person shooters. But like one of the things that, you know, I could kind of understand my brother being nitpicky about, like, you know, the AI stuff because he's a programmer. For me, it's just someone like, you know, someone that's into story and things like that. You know, things
you are, you actually, we call you an intern, but you are our editern. Because you are an editor, for freelance, kind of a freelance editor for us, as well as an intern.
Indeedy. And so one of the things that interests me is, like, you know, story and whatnot. And I guess, you know, the things that make for a good environment that is engrossing. And just the fact that in the beginning of the game, they really cinematic and finely manicured, you know, intro to bring you into this wonderful world of Colombia. And there's like loose change all over the place and like food just kind of sitting around for you to eat. And it's like, who keeps change in a hat box? And like, you know, like a hot dog just kind of sitting out there. Would I just normally go over there and pick it up and eat it?
This is the strangest nitpick I've ever heard. There's too much change around.
The food thing is a little weird. Like who would just leave a hot dog? And would you, like, you were just walking around, would you just walk up and grab a random hot dog?
If I was hungry, maybe.
Yeah,
well, if it was just sitting out there, because, like, for me, like, okay, and this is the point where, like, I start overthinking it, where it's like, okay, if this was real life, I wouldn't do it. Wait, is Ken Levine taking this into account? Because I know he's super, like, you know, nitpicky with how he makes his games, because he's such a perfectionist. If I pick up this hot dog later, will I be punished by getting, I don't know, food poisoning somewhere down the line? Will this cost me in salt somehow?
Or, you know, you're inside of this libertopian paradise, maybe the fact that you can go around and eat everybody's hot dogs and take all their money. Maybe you're like a communist.
The hot dog is a metaphor.
I have no idea what you're saying, but that's all cool.
Libertopian. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just my initial nitpick and the fact that, like, no, this is, I wouldn't say it's, like, the experience is very similar to the old BioShock. Whatever you do, because I was thinking about this before. I was thinking about actually going in to play the first game before I play this.
Comes free with the PS3 version.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Play Infinite first. Play BioShock afterwards if you're going to go back and do that, just to see kind of the similarities and how, like, basically, I guess there's a handshake there somewhere.
Yeah.
Between both games, but yeah, it's...
Well, the thing that I've found is that a lot of... And, you know, again, I'm kind of avoiding spoilers because I haven't started playing yet, but I'm seeing a lot of people tweeting about, like, how amazing the ending, or I should say shocking the ending is, and people are tweeting about it a lot, and it's getting me really excited to play. And also, we have actually two really good friends of the show who worked on that game, Sean Elliott, and who's a former EGM brother of mine, and Joe Fielder, actually, who's also a former EGM brother of mine.
Nice.
I didn't even realize. Yeah, so they both were involved in the narrative of that game, so... Super excited to play it. Don't want to hear too much about it, but I definitely going to get into it. I see, you know, when people talk about an ending in a way where they're like actually genuinely surprised or like shocked, like that's always nice because very few games manage to shock me anymore. So
shocking.
BioShocking.
Thank you, Dan. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to get into some news, which we have a lot of and we won't get to most of it. So we'll see you after the break.
Thank you for staying this far so far.
Yeah. All right, and here we go with the news. Take it away, Tom.
Welcome to the news, buddies.
Is that how it is in the UK? Yeah. You're not making a good argument for your European friends over there.
Do the BBC thing.
Oh, hello, this is the BBC.
There we go. And the British big castle, right?
British Broadcasting Castle.
So we, a lot of things happened, GDC, all sorts of crazy things. But the biggest piece of news out of Japan is that Yoichi Wada, CEO of Square Enix, stepped down.
Megaton.
The ex-CEO. That's like, this guy has been the CEO since they merged into Square Enix, right?
Yeah, and he also, for a long time, was the guy in charge of CESA, the Consumer Electronics Software Association, which is kind of like the ESRB of Japan. He hasn't been up until now. He changed roles recently. But, I mean, the point is he was a major player in the industry here.
Right, and this is because of Square Enix they were expecting to incur extraordinary loss this fiscal year. Because apparently their games didn't sell, and the amount of loss they were anticipating was 10 billion yen, or just about $105 million, which is a lot of money.
And their games actually didn't do. I mean, the game like Tomb Raider and stuff; those games did not do that bad, but their expectations were ridiculous.
Right,
like, they just expected them to sell way more than any sane human being would.
They
have
were expecting
them to
Tomb Raider to ship 5 to 6 million copies, Hitman 4.5 to 5. Sleeping Dogs 2 to 2.5 million copies.
It is worth pointing out as well, they specifically noted that it was the sale of big titles in America and Europe that was for the losses. And then I think they also said arcade games in Japan.
I find it interesting and almost somewhat insulting that like the West gets blamed for this when they're hashing out this Final Fantasy bullshit like every year. That is just like, that franchise has been dug into the ground. It's like, come on, really? You're going to blame? Nope. Tomb Raider is a great game. I only played like 2 hours of it, and I love it. Like,
not
really
one
good
fucking mention of the 10 years they've been spending stroking Nomura's boner for Versus.
It is. Sleeping Dogs is a great game as well.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah.
So is Hitman.
Yeah.
Like, they're all really good games.
Well, you of course you love Hitman because you look like Hitman. But, you know, to be fair, though, I think, like, and I mean, I don't mean to be, I don't want to dog water or anything, but this was long overdue. Like, this should have happened years ago.
It's
like,
true.
It's pretty clear that the company has been mismanaged. And so I'm actually very hopeful that the new guy they brought in is going to, you know, do stuff right.
And that new guy is Yosuke Matsuda, who I think apparently was the head
CFO.
Of Taito.
Yeah, a long time ago he was. Yeah,
and he was the CFO. And, you know, in Wada's favor, he is responsible for Eidos and, like, the Tomb Raider and stuff that we were talking about just now.
Sure.
And there have been a few good games that he, you know,
I don't really know. It's probably not really fair to totally, like, you know, just put him out as like the great evil,
right.
But
a lot of people
want to
shit on Wada.
I do feel like a lot of the reason for Japan's fall was non-management. Let's put it that way. Like, there was nobody going in to say, like, no, you know, don't spend 7 years on Versus 13 and don't do this and don't make up Final Fantasy 13, you know, 2 or whatever. Like, you know,
right.
So in a sense, you know, the guy on top has to take the fall for that. So I think it's good.
Yes.
It's a good thing.
And so Mr. Yosuke Matsuda, the new president or CEO of Square Enix, is looking to review the entire company top to bottom and replace every game with social games. I made that last part up.
So at what part of this review does he trip over Final Fantasy VII and realize, oh, people have been wanting this for a long time. Why don't we just do this and it'll print money?
I don't totally blame them for not doing that, though. I mean, you know what? That's another conversation, though. You're right. I don't think the Final Fantasy X-2 remake was a smart decision. I mean, it's going to do something, but it's not going to do anything. What they could have put that money to use in much better ways.
He went on to say that I'd like to fundamentally review what works and what doesn't work for our company, then cast all of our resources towards extending what makes us successful and thoroughly squeezing out what doesn't.
Sure.
Which, like, I mean, you know, if you look at the sales and stuff.
So no more Final Fantasy.
It does sound a lot like.
No, there should be much more Final Fantasy, but it should be done right.
Like, you know, they'll gear towards mobile because that stuff's been successful, like
right.
Social.
I don't know if young people know this, but like there was a time when a new announcement of a Final Fantasy game was the most exciting thing in the world. Like nothing was bigger.
You went to TGS basically to see the new Final Fantasy.
Pretty much. Like, and it, you know, that can and should come back.
Yeah. Well
yeah, I feel bad having dropped off at Final Fantasy X. I don't know. I think something just after 10 for me, like particularly with character design, I just have not been feeling it. Just it feels like I can see these people if I go to like, you know, Harajuku or something like that.
Right. have you seen, there's a picture going around of the guy, I think his name is Waka, the weird guy with the hair.
From 10?
Yeah, Waka. From 10.
The weird guy and, with the hair. That's pretty much all of it.
And like, you know, it's a series of, it's just that one picture of Waka with his mouth like open, looking all excited. And it starts out with just him. And then like, you know, a couple of pictures over, he like shaves his head down. And then a couple of pictures later, he like dyes his hair black and he's like wearing a suit. And then like a couple, like the next picture, he's like wearing glasses and then he grows a mustache and then his hair goes gray. And it's like, you know, it's basically commentary on Japanese men and how they start out like wild and like, I'm, you know, a rebel. And then they slowly become businessmen and then they become middle management and then they become shacho and then they die.
Well, one other thing to bring this back to reality, yeah. I do want to say,
gravity.
I hope that we also heard today that Square Enix USA had a bunch of layoffs.
Yes.
So, you know, hope all you guys land on your feet. There's a lot of really talented people there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were kind of a victim of this whole thing. There was sort of a side thing of Square having to restructure. So.
Right. Well, yep. And our hearts go out to them. And hopefully they will land on their feet. I've seen a lot of, you know, outpour from and actually for the people in our next story, of just like offering jobs.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Which is great. I love that about the gaming industry, and I've said this before, but
yeah, man, good people look out for everything.
Yeah. The gaming industry is surprisingly small, and you know, people look out for other people, and that's really awesome. So, people to look out for. So Disney closed LucasArts.
No.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know. At first, I had the same reaction as everybody else. It's like, LucasArts, yeah, they made all those games I love. But in the last few years, they haven't really made much.
No, they haven't made anything.
It's certainly not the same LucasArts that put out Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle.
And even then, they haven't, in the last 3 years, they really haven't put out anything that they've made. So Disney closed them down, development side down, to switch over to more of a licensing model. Minimizing the company's risk while achieving a broader portfolio of quality for Star Wars games. It sounds like they did go ahead and cancel. Well, I mean, they will no longer be handling the development of Star Wars 1313. That Yikes. Crazy, like,
which looked pretty cool.
Yeah, like everybody, that was like the first exposure to next gen that a lot of people had, especially in this office, and it looked amazing. I'm kind of surprised that they aren't gonna continue with it. Maybe they are, who knows?
Yeah.
But it won't be at LucasArts.
It doesn't sound like a bad decision business wise. Like, I mean, I think if I was in charge of that franchise, I'm not saying I would shut down LucasArts, but I think like having it be open to licensing with other developers and stuff probably makes more sense financially.
Like, I would love to see I don't know who said this on Twitter, but I would love to see Platinum Games make a Star Wars.
Oh man. Yeah. Game. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Well, that would be awesome. I don't know. I mean, I'm speaking only for myself here, but I feel a little fatigued with Jedi and stuff like that. 1313 at least promised to take, you know, Star Wars kind of into the rest of the galaxy. And that's why I was kind of, you know, like worried that like, okay, now that LucasArts has finally realized, okay, no more Kinect games where we get to swing our arms around like we have a lightsaber. Hey, you're talking to a guy who has a Kinect Star Wars t-shirt here.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know they're gonna do stuff though, because they have like, I mean, they got the new movies coming out. Like, there's obviously plans to be making games.
It's not the end.
It's just too bad that, you know, a whole lot of people had.
And this could open up the door for licensing of, you know, King's, well, all those old LucasArts games to people like Telltale.
It could, but it's
or Activision.
Pretty unlikely.
It is. Ron Gilbert has been tweeting a whole bunch about like getting the rights back to Maniac Mansion, right?
Yeah, but dude, that would be awesome.
It is also worth noting that back when Disney took over, they did in fact mention like, "Oh, this will not affect Star Wars 1313."
There was like, a gaff thread, and that thread was bumped today, and everybody was just posting GIFs of them crying, and it's oh well. But hope that all those guys land on their feet, and and so in more Japan news. Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, was revealed, and unfortunately, Joachim Morgan was
Mogren, whatever
he was, a real person.
Oh,
or was he a wax mask worn by Kojima? I don't know. But apparently, at first, people thought it was going to be one. That is just Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, is one game, but actually,
it sounds like there are two games, Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes and Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain. They'll be released separately, and the first being a smaller scale prequel to the other. It doesn't actually say here which
one. And you know what?
Smaller.
People said that, like, I saw news stories where they're like, yeah, you know, Kojima said this, but actually it was this. But no, if you actually go back and see what they said, he just said that those two are Metal Gear Solid 5. He didn't say they're the same game. What he meant is, maybe it was lost in translation, but what he meant is Metal Gear Solid 5 is comprised of Ground Zeroes and Phantom Pain.
Right.
So.
And the trailer they released was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a little confused by it because it was like taken from the first person, and at one point he looks at his arm and it's got like a hook.
Yeah.
But he's looking over at, I thought that was Snake.
Yeah.
On the operating bed or whatever at the hospital. And then later it shows like some guy that looks like Snake and he's got like the hook arm. Like the
he was looking at himself.
Was he looking at a mirror?
Did I just blow your mind?
No, because he's in the hospital, and they're like, okay, we saved him, but it was too late. He's in a coma.
Right.
And then they go, okay, what about that guy? And then they all look at like the camera, you know, like the first person.
Oh, right.
And so I'm like, well, who's, did they both lose an arm?
Well, that's exactly what Kojima wants, right? He is a master, if nothing else, he is a master of like this sort of trickery, you know, like with his how he reveals things. I mean, I think that guy deserves a lot of credit for how he went about unveiling this game. Like, no one would have the balls to like make a fake trailer in this like fake Swedish company. I mean, everybody knew it. And, well, and credit to Gaff too, who like pulled out the logo and everything within like a day. Like, everyone figured it out immediately, but you know, we all had fun. Like, it was a fun ride. Like, more people should take their stuff a little less seriously and have fun with their reveals and you know, do stuff like this. So I think Kojima deserves a lot of credit for that.
Well, Kojima also can afford to be Kojima after however many Metal Gear games that he's done.
Sure.
So,
right.
Like, I think he's probably one of the few people that can actually do this kind of stuff and get away with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on kind of like the darker side of this announcement, apparently the voice of Snake, or the ex-voice of Snake, David Hayter, will not be in this game.
Yeah, I wonder what's up with that. You know, it's too bad. I don't know. Well, I say it's too bad because clearly the fans are pretty upset about it. There's been like a unanimous just like outcry against them for dropping him. But
like, you know, I love Mark Hamill, but I could never see Mark Hamill become Optimus Prime, you know.
That's okay. He's just the Joker.
I know he's the Joker, but like, if someone, if like John, you became the voice of Joker all of a sudden, I like.
Wait, Mark Hamill's not in this though, right?
No, I'm sorry. This is a weird reference. What I'm trying to say is that Optimus Prime's voice makes Optimus Prime.
Right, right.
You would not want to hear another voice.
Peter Cullen.
And, you know, as much as people like saying like, oh yeah, David Hayter is totally just like phoning it in, or he's overplaying the role or whatever. He is Snake.
Right. I agree. And to be fair, I don't think he was like great, but he did, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
He was Snake.
The thing that I kind of wonder is that, like, I mean,
his name was Snake.
It's not just David Hayter that's attached to Metal Gear and whatnot. I mean, isn't there like a whole like crew of voice acting people? Like, I think Chris Zimmerman was the person who put together all the voice director for all the different Metal Gears. I mean, if he's not in it, is she a part of it? I mean,
I don't know for sure, but I would have to imagine she is. I don't think this is there could be politics behind it, who knows, but I don't think so. I think there was a comment about how this is Big Boss as he's a little bit older. They wanted to try a new voice. There could be some, maybe they had a falling out. I don't know.
But that's the thing that I don't understand. I mean, like, you cultivate a relationship with a guy that has been your go-to voice, not just, you know, he has been the voice for the character and partially because of that, an evangelist for the game for so long.
Right.
You don't leave someone like that in the lurch. So part of me is thinking, like, is this also another elaborate Kojima con?
Right. I was thinking that too, but I think if that were the case, I don't think Hayter would have said some of the things he said on Twitter. Like
that it made him ill to hear someone else's voice.
Right. But that is a possibility. And I think another possibility that people should leave open is they might hear this outcry and realize, okay, hey, it's not too late to make a change. You never know. I mean, they could. There are other games I know of, like very big AAA games that got close to release with a completely different voice cast. And then, like, you know, there was a little bit of an outcry and they went back and re-recorded the whole thing with the original voices. So you never know. You never know.
Do you think, though, even if they change voice actor, would that make a difference to sales in any way? Is there anyone who is a Metal Gear fan so much that they would?
I'm sure there is.
I think there's probably a small amount of people who would, yeah, be.
Wait a minute. This is the guy that won't fucking buy DMC because he's not wearing a bro and a red.
No, it's that's it's an entire gameplay shift. There's a difference.
Dan, sorry, you look like you were.
Well, he said the article, he's saying that hearing another voice makes him ill as Snake. And that was him in the hospital bed because he was sick.
You heard another voice. You're going meta on us, Dan. Maybe. I don't know.
They're introducing time travel in this one, I think. Yeah. It's going to be two snakes.
Two snakes.
You think it's going to be... You really think so?
Yeah, because it's going to be his voice and then the guy when he's a little bit older.
But why would Hader say all those things? That's not...
It's all a ruse.
I will say if it's all a ruse, I would take my hat off even further for Kojima. Because I really love when he does shit like that. But I don't know. I get the impression
to be completely honest, I mean, if you're going to go online and like complain about stuff, it's very, very difficult to actually do it in a way that you don't sound like, you know... It's very difficult to do it in a way that sounds classy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the nature of the complaint.
Yeah, but when like Koji Bro does their like quote unquote ruses, it's pretty obvious. Like the interview with Jeff Keighley and Joachim was like,
but be that
so obvious that this was just completely canned.
Be that as it may, it kind of has to, doesn't it kind of have to look a little bit kind of like, you know, over the top and just a little bit like painful to watch? If you want to make it believable, Hader has to actually kind of just bring it out. I mean, I know he like tweeted that this isn't an April Fool's thing, even though the news came out on April 1st, but part of me is just kind of like, no, I've heard these things before. I don't know if I still want to trust that. And I still want to hold out hope that David Hayter is Solid Snake.
Plus, he is an actor, so he could just be acting.
Right. David Hayter, is he CG or is he real? We don't know. during GDC, they had this kind of award show thing. I think it's called the Game Developers Choice Awards.
Yes.
Here it's a big deal.
It is. It's pretty much the... Well, that and DICE are like the two...
Yeah.
You know, Spike is kind of like the side thing, but like these two are like the legit real awards.
Yeah, Spike is the Nickelodeon Viewers Choice Awards to DICE and GDC's Oscars and what's the other one?
Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, yeah. And Journey won every category.
Right.
Let's see. Except for best debut and best handheld game.
Really?
They won best. The Walking Dead got best narrative. Mm. Best technology, Far Cry 3. But yeah, everything else was Journey.
Right.
The debut game was Subset Games Faster Than Light FTL, which Tony, you played a lot of.
Oh yes, lots of Faster Than Light. Love Faster Than Light.
Cool.
There was news today about FTL. That they are still working on an iOS version of it, but it's kind of like on the back burner, and I think it's just they're taking a lot of time to make it right, because there's a lot of controls that would be difficult to translate to touch.
Be that as it may, though, it would be the perfect iOS game.
That's what I'm waiting for, just like XCOM.
XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Thank God it's coming to iOS. Everyone will get to play it now. Yes!
I will play it eventually. So I guess you guys didn't go. Was it?
No, we wanted to. We had other stuff going on.
I watched it a little bit. It was very entertaining.
It was actually in the middle of Kataoka-san's speech.
Oh, really?
And people started leaving.
Oh, no.
And like at the end, he's like, did people hate my speech? So I was like, no. It's the awards going on right now. He's like, okay.
And they had the Independent Games awards before that. And the Seamus McNally Award went to the guy who did Cart Life.
Seamus.
Is that like Lissy?
I'm American. I don't know all this Irish crap. Cart Life won the Seamus McNally Award. I'm really curious about the game. It's about like you sell things in a cart.
Yeah. They did a talk about it on Idle Thumbs one episode back, and it totally sold me on it. Like
one thing,
except it's not like on Steam or anything. It's just like a download thing on PC.
So. Yeah. One thing I would like to say, just having watched it, like I think we need to buy suits and tuxedos.
We do.
Game industry guys. Go into award shows in your blazers and jeans
that's never gonna happen. Yeah. Nobody's gonna wear suits.
hoodies
in the game industry.
Right. Also, in very good news, not only for you guys but for us too, Skullgirls.
Hmm. Oh, man, yeah.
They not only hit their target.
What was their target?
I think it was $250,000.
Okay.
They hit all of their stretch goals,
uh-huh.
created more stretch goals, mm-hmm. and hit those too.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They totally killed it. I was shocked. I mean, you know, we've been involved in this project almost from the beginning, so of course, like, we were always, like, rooting for it, but, like, yeah. I never expected the audience to be this, like, you know, just, like, super, you know, enthusiastic about it. Like, right. they put out a lot of money.
$829,829.
That's insane.
That's awesome. But yeah. that now reminds me that I have to go back to my desk and read the contract. Our end of the deal.
So what the players got was five new characters, I think seven extra stages. The guys at Main Six, the bronies. Now, okay, I want to just stop here. Like, I say a lot of shit about bronies, and I do not like bronies. But I am glad, you know, these guys got dicked out of their game that they've been working hard on by Mattel, I think it was. And, I mean, you know, Mattel, they want to protect their property, and I understand that. But now they have, you know, a new set of characters that's being, you know, designed by the creator of My Little Pony. And now they have a free engine, a fighting game engine, to put those characters in because of all the donations that the Skullgirls team got.
Isn't it Hasbro, not Mattel?
I think
Mattel's Barbie.
Probably Hasbro, whoever. Well, yeah, you're a big Barbie fan, right? So you, yeah.
Yes, of course.
So wait, I'm sorry. What do you,
Hasbro.
I don't know about this part. So what are you saying? Like,
so
My Little Pony characters are going to be in Skullgirls?
No.
It's a separate fighting game, right?
Fighting is magic.
As one of the extra stretch goals that they put on towards the end, if they got like $725,000, they would give the
engine.
The engine.
Oh, okay.
To Main nice. Six to use on their game for free.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Otherwise, they would have to pay for it.
What's the best part of all this, JJ?
The best part of all of this is that we get to produce seven new songs.
Of Michiru Yamane?
Yeah, Michiru Yamane will get to compose seven new songs.
Is it seven? Actually, have they said that?
I mean, it's seven stages.
There's a number of new songs. I'm not sure exactly how many there are. Yeah, right. But she's going to be making new music. No, it's not announced. I actually literally don't know. But she's making new music, which is the important thing. And she's amazing. She's the Castlevania Symphony of the Night composer.
Right.
Who worked on Skullgirls.
And now they're just... two of the characters I think people get to vote on. And they're holding the votes now. I think it's $1 to enter and you can vote up to four times. Mm. And I'm awesome. Curious to see who wins.
Congrats to you guys. That is kick ass.
Yeah,
seriously.
When are we going to do a Kickstarter? Happy.
Also, I think it should be noted that these characters initially are pretty. Characters on the stage initially are going to be free up front and they're going to charge for it later. So,
right.
That being said, if you don't own Skullgirls, buy it now.
Yeah.
You will get all of this for free.
Yeah. Right? Mm. And I hear it's coming out on Steam. I saw a rumor or someone like hacked Steam or something found out it's coming out on Steam.
Nice.
So. Get that shit.
Congrats, guys. Lab Zero Games, right? Is there a new...
Yeah. And continuing with stuff that we have done, we did an interview.
Oh, yeah.
Interview.
It's out, finally.
With the developers of
17 months ago.
I know.
Fire Emblem Awakening.
Did it in like January or something?
Yeah.
The Fire Emblem interview where, I think we talked about this already, but where we got to go to the legendary building where all the great Famicom games were made back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
We did an interview with those guys, and it's...
You asked a very important question, dear to everybody's hearts, and it was about the lack of feet on any of the characters. And they went on to say that the idea was to add a unique sort of deformation to the characters. We weren't entirely sure how many bones and joints we'd be able to use, blah, blah, blah. And then they just escaped with, aren't high heels the big fashion these days?
The point was that, you know, they were working on this game actually before the 3DS hardware was finalized. So they didn't know how much they were going to have. You know, I don't remember. I know parts of the interview were, of course, trimmed out and edited. This is an official Nintendo thing. So they go in and decide what content gets released, whatever. But, you know, one of the things they were saying was basically, you know, if you think about it, a game like Fire Emblem, It's really not... Of course, cutscenes, yeah. I'm not defending the lack of feet, but, like, when the battle scenes and stuff, these guys aren't kicking each other. They're swinging swords and stuff. It's way more important that the upper body is done properly. So when they didn't have the 3DS hardware, that's what they put the focus on. Right. But the problem was they never went back to it afterwards when they realized, oh, yeah, we actually could put feet in. So...
Yeah, and apparently during playtesting, a lot of people brought it up, and then he was like, we can't do much about that now. Mm-hmm. And, they just kind of, at the end, they laughed.
Yeah, they laughed. No, they were super cool. That was a great interview, a really great experience.
So really long and just good, full of just really interesting stuff.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
So that'll be in the show notes.
Check it out. It should be in the show notes, and it's on our, we retweeted it on our A4 Play. Yeah. Let's see what else we got here. The Wii U won't be getting Unreal Engine 4.
Bummer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Yeah. Phantasy Star Online 2 delayed in North America. Finally, we get a little comment. I wonder if this came out as from all the pressure that we've been putting on them on the podcast.
Wait, they announced that it's coming out?
No, they announced that it's delayed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
With no
They didn't specify like what part of it. Of course, they didn't specify.
We don't have any specifics, but we'll update everyone as soon as there are more details to share.
Yay.
Whenever that happens. Game designer. Oh, so did you guys hear about like they had a like an experimental game design thing where a bunch of developers came and just brought like experimental game designs
at GDC?
Yeah,
they did that. Is this
the one that Jason Rohrer won?
And so Jason Rohrer, the guy behind Diamond Trust of London and The Passage, Passage.
Yeah, and Castle Doctrine, I think.
And
too.
Castle Doctrine, yeah.
Nice.
Brought a game that, this is what he said
wait,
about
wait, 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 hold on. Can we talk about the other contestants, what they came up with? Because they're luminaries in gaming, right? What does the story talk about?
This one's only about the game he made, but if you have...
I don't really recall, but I do think it was like, was Will Wright? I think,
Will, yeah, Will Wright brought something... what's his name from Journey? Something as well. But
I
it's called
his name a lot too. I feel that.
Is it Genova
Chen? Yes. Sorry, yes. Thank you. It's called A Game for Someone, and Jason Rohrer describing the game says, "I wanted to make a game that is not for right now, that I will never play, and nobody now living would ever play."
Oh no! Wait, that was The Passage, dude. I didn't realize that. Oh, that's awesome.
Very cool. Like, as I'm reading this, I'm like, "Oh, this is so fucking pretentious and stupid." I read about all like the stuff that he actually did to do this. Like,
explain what he did.
So he basically made this game, didn't show it to anybody, and dug it into the Nevada desert for someone to find.
Yeah, he made it. He made it of titanium. Yeah. It's basically a titanium board game.
He made the game.
I think he. It's not just the desert. I think did he distribute it like around different parts of
no desert?
No, just in the desert. But it's an 18-inch by 18-inch game board, and
made of titanium. It's like 30 pounds.
30 pounds of titanium. He wrapped it up in a Pyrex glass tube, which is housed inside of a titanium baton. And it's dug underground and somewhere in the Nevada desert.
And the location is only known to him,
right?
In addition to whoever actually finds it, but then who can actually find it? I guess like he distributed how many GPS codes? Like
900 sets of GPS coordinates. He gave everybody in the audience an envelope with a paper full of 900 sets of GPS coordinates. In total, he gave the audience more than 1 million unique GPS coordinates. Uh-huh. So he estimated that if one person visits one of those GPS locations each day with a metal detector, the game will be unearthed sometime within the next million days, a little over 2,700 years.
This sounds like the cube from Peter Mahoney.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's much cooler.
On how to play and everything, or what?
It's probably,
I think he said something about like he had to like think up like really just kind of intuitive, like I guess pictographs that kind of display how it's actually played, because you know in the wildest scenario we're like, you know, because mankind is at that point in it's
North Korea is ready to launch,
exactly, yeah. Like we might not be around in the next 2,000 podcast. years, right? So I mean, who like if extraterrestrials are out there and they find the game, they should be able to play the game because of, you know, have the simple instructions that come with it.
So and you know what? Hats off to any extraterrestrials that are going to other planets just to play games.
Right. But like, you know, I was, as I was reading the article, like, you know, I went from, oh, this is pretentious and stupid. Yeah, a game that nobody will ever play. I'm Peter Molyneux.
And then you went to Don Quixote and bought a Spelunker hat and you're going to go searching for it.
But yeah, like, you know, the all like the painstaking effort that he went into to actually make this a game that nobody could find.
Uh-huh. That's pretty awesome.
And that someone could play in 2000 years.
Jason Rohrer is kind of a thoughtful game maker. Yeah. I have, what is that, Diamond Trust of London, and I have, unfortunately I have not been able to play it with any other person, but I mean...
That's a DS game, right?
That it's a DS game.
It was a Kickstarter. Like,
yeah. It was a Kickstarter, and it's like one of the few DS games that I think like you can't really get at retail, but it's a, like a legit DS game. Like, you know,
I didn't realize that was him, because Passage obviously was a big deal when it first came out. Right. I mean, I don't know how many people have
played
it.
The last time Rohrer was in the news was for Castle Doctrine, which is basically like a game about home invasion. It's like, I think it's a massively multiplayer maybe, really? About home invasion, where you kind of set up your house and like you have traps and everything like that. And
it's like Mousetrap.
Right.
Home Alone.
It's like Home Alone. Yeah, that's what I was. But then like, you know, people try to break in and whatnot, and then like, you know, they can actually kill your family and everything.
Right. And the Castle Doctrine refers to the Castle Doctrine law that allows you to kill somebody if they come into your home.
Yeah. So yeah, this is something that is not entirely surprising to me, but I find very, very interesting and cool. Hats off to Jason Rohrer.
Okay, cool. And just like a few small pieces of news before we get out of here.
Tidbits, as
there
they
was
say
in last week's Famitsu, there was an article with Takamasa Shiba and Taro Yoko of Nier and Dragon Guard fame.
My buddy.
This was actually very interesting, but Yoko-san was telling that they were talking about how when the PlayStation 3 was first announced that they proposed a sequel to Dragon Guard.
Right, right.
And apparently that game became Nier. And they say here that basically Nier is Dragon Guard 3.
Right, right.
And this is like something, I mean, maybe this is Dragon Guard 4.
Well, maybe.
Excuse me, I'm beklempt. It became a thing, like, afterwards, after Nier came out, like, it was revealed in the Nier, Grimoire Nier, the like, kind of strategy guide slash, like, lore book that Nier takes place after one of the endings of Dragon Guard, which is amazingly awesome. So,
right.
In the same world. And it explains how the disease in Nier got born and everything. Super fascinating stuff. That guy's a great storyteller, needs to make more games, so I'm super excited about Dragon Guard 3.
Another positive Square news, or maybe news, Silicon Era is reporting that there is a rumor he was hearing all around the Game Developers Conference that Bravely Default Flying Fairy is going to be localized for the West.
Oh my god!
Maybe. That game is really good. You
not us.
Play it. It's not us. I wish it was, though. Let's see, what else? Also, Shin Megami Tensei is coming to North America. That's great news. Miiverse is coming to smartphones and PC next month.
There was a thoughtful article by Emily Rogers about Iwata. I don't know if you
saw that. Man, she eviscerates that dude.
She does, but she does. I mean, she doesn't do it in a disrespectful way. She just does it with. She basically wrecks his shit with facts.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to read and kind of is very sobering because he's kind of right about a lot
and,
of stuff.
And to end on a brighter note, also courtesy of Famitsu. Not everybody knows this, but you know, it's been 2 years since the earthquake, and a lot of the recovery effort is still going on. And one gaming company that is working with, you know, the people of the Tohoku, the northeast, or the northeast region of Japan, is the Pokemon Company, and they've been there from the get go. And apparently, you know, they've been doing things like they've had this Pokemon wagon that goes around and lets, you know, they. They give kids coloring books, papercraft projects, Pokemon game sets. They have Christmas events and parades in affected areas, free movie screenings.
That's
and
awesome.
Then they also opened up a Pokemon Center in the Tohoku area.
Oh, wow.
And use most of the proceeds that, you know, when most of the money that's spent at the Pokemon Center in that area goes back into the community. And I just thought that was really cool that you know, Pokemon Company is doing that for those guys.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I mean, we have shitloads of news like the Xbox Durango.
Durango.
All right, I'm gonna fuck that up. And GameSpot CEO says Xbox is a hot, compelling device.
It's going to be really exciting when they announce the next
so
Xbox.
Pumped.
I want to say, like, one thing came coming out of GDC, I mean, PlayStation 4, super, everybody, like, super high on PlayStation 4. Like, everybody's, like, really excited about it. You know, whereas people are kind of down on Wii U and just sort of waiting for Microsoft. Sony seems to be doing a lot of things right.
Yeah.
As far as like attracting the right people to the platform, getting indie developers excited about it. Like, I am stoked for PS4 right now.
All right.
We'll see what happens when they announce the like $900 price. But
yeah. By the way, we are doing another Dark Souls stream this weekend.
Hooray!
Sunday out. Japan time. I think that's still Sunday Europe time. 7 p.m. Well, actually, no. 6 p.m. We're doing a little earlier this year. I mean, not this year. This week. I'll be tweeting it like crazy, and I'll probably be doing pre-show. Tony's probably coming a little early.
What's the theme this time? Are you like running around naked again?
We're running around naked, and this time we're going to be playing the PC version.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little bit different because I believe, how do you have your setup now? Is the camera like right above like the PC so you can actually, it's like the camera's all up in our grill, right?
Well, no, I got like the super long HDMI cable, so now I can just have it being played on the TV.
Okay.
And it'll be a similar setup as last time.
So, okay, this is, all right, that sounds good. I'm going to bring my Xbox 360 controller just in case.
Oh, is it wired?
It's wired, yeah.
Oh, thank God. Okay. I actually bought a Bluetooth dongle so I could use my one of my PS3 controllers.
Okay. Yeah, last time I had controller issues, and I'm
I think you're better off with the Xbox controller, probably.
Yeah. Well, Johnny wants the PS3 controller. We'll see. I think we might have to switch.
We'll figure this out somehow. But it'll be fun. It'll be embarrassing, like last time. Yes. Come along and, you know, heckle and cheer us on at the same time.
We'll have a PC, and we'll be able to chat with everybody.
There will probably be...
All right. And JJ will post the info on Twitter and I guess the show notes. Maybe, and
it'll be all over the place.
And I'll try to retweet on my end. I know my friends were like, Tony didn't tweet details. It's because I was too mortified in the beginning.
I tuned in for a little bit. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, we're all right. So where can people find us on the internet?
8-4.jp or on Facebook. Just look up 8-4. You can find us on Giant Bomb. Be sure to check out, like JJ mentioned at the top of the show, check out their... live streams from GDC. Mark was on there for a while.
Yes.
With the XCOM guys who are big fans of Fire Emblem, right. Which is awesome.
Yeah.
And also
iTunes.
iTunes, yeah. Leave us some reviews. We got to check the reviews. Haven't checked them lately.
Yeah, we haven't looked at them.
Also, Twitter, 84Play. Follow us and follow each of us individually. Hiroko.
Hiroko84.
JJ.
SPRSK.
Tony.
At just Tony L.
TAS Tokyo.
That's Tom.
And Dan.
And Pooter McGee.
U-T-E-R-M-C-G-E-E.
The iPhone app king.
Also, what can you give us your wife's bakery Twitter account?
Oh, awesome.
It's ayakashi_JP, so AYAKASHI_JP.
And if you follow her, you can see all the cool treats that she made us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why Dan will have an internship for the rest of his life. And I'm John TV. So thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with us. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Mark will be back.
Yeah.
To talk about his time drinking rum out of coconuts.
Happy about.
JJ's like enjoying his spot on the throne.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, the news is really hard to do. Mark does a good job at that.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Maybe we could talk about this after the podcast.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so who's going to take us out this week? Dan?
Hey, boyos. I'm from New York. Wow. Even worse.
You can't put me on the spot.
What do you got there? video game has over 200 games.
Cool, 200 games?
That's right. Over 200 games can be yours with Pro 200, the greatest bargain in computer game history. 256 action-packed games all in this one compact unit. And with 15 skill levels for each game, there are more than 2,000 ways to play. Through this special TV offer, you can get the Pro 200 for just $19.98. That's less than 10 cents per game. Play games like Space War, Ping Pong, Race Car, Shooting Attack, and much more. This new computer chip technology replaces older cartridge games forever. Never, ever buy those expensive cartridges again. You'll get the Pro 200 with over 200 games for only $19.98, a fraction of what you'd pay for those older systems. But that's not all. The Pro 200 is also a full-function calculator and is not available in stores. Here's how to order.
For fast delivery of Pro 200 with over 200 computer games, call 1-800-306-5100 or send $19.98 plus shipping and handling to the address on your screen.